Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh, is daf Lamed Hey. But we're holding at the bottom of Lamed Dalet on the Beit, Tana Rabbanan Ketzat Sidran. So to get to the order of the Parshiot, says the Gemara, the order of the Parshiot is basically, if we start at the first Parsha in Shmot, Kadesh Likol Bochor, and then we go to Vahayaki Aviyacha, those should be on the right side, and Shema Vahaya Im Shamoa should be on the left side. Now, that itself is a basic machlokas. What do we mean by right side and left side? So we're going to see in a moment that obviously we have to decide whether we're talking about right side from the point of view of the wearer or right side from the point of view of the facer, namely the person that would be reading the invisible parshiot in the tefillah. So asks the Gemara, I thought we have a braita that says to do it just in the opposite way. So it says, Kadesh v'ahaya li, and v'ahaya ki tavo is the Kadesh v'ahaya ki v'yacha. It says over there is mi smol, and Shema v'ahaya im shamoa is mi yamin. So I'd explain that. Rabbi, well, it's pretty easy, isn't it? I mean, kan mimino shel korei. In the first braita, we were talking about somebody who's going to be reading these parshiot. So it's as if he's looking at you. And now he's going to be reading the parshiot from right to left, because they are, after all, written in Hebrew. And therefore, as he starts on the right side, he starts with the first parsha. Kadesh li kol bochor. Goes on in the direction of the Hebrew writing. And he then reads Vayaki Aviyacha, and then he reads Shema, and then he reads Vayayim Shemua. If, however, you're talking about it from the point of view of the right-hand side of the wearer, so then obviously it's going to be in the opposite direction. Kan miyamino shel ameniach. So the individual who's wearing it, obviously that's the equivalent of the other guy's left side, which is what he's going to be reading at the end, which is Shema V'Hoya Im Shema. Now the question is, what do we mean by the beginning and the end? Now this, of course, is the big machlokas that everybody knows about between Rashi and the Rabbi Natam. But what they don't know, as the Gra points out, is that there's another 50 or 60 different in how exactly to order the tefillin. And because of that, says the Gra, it doesn't make much sense to try to be Yotze all of the dais, because you'll be spending your whole day putting on tefillin. So it, therefore, Paskins like Rashi. But what do we mean when we say, and the reader reads it? The pashtus of this sugya is like Rashi is saying. The reader would read it facing you, and as if he would be able to use his x-ray vision on looking at your tefillin, and that indeed is what the tefillin are meant to be, remember. They're meant to be carrying these actual parshiot and to be exposing them to you through the door. And you recognize this is the bayit of Shema, this is the bayit of Ayam Shema. So then you would want the reader to be able to read it the way it appears in the Sefer Torah, in that order. So that's Kadesh Likol Bochor, immediately followed by Vayaki V'yaka. And then we skip to Devarim, and we have two parshiot, one which has Shema and V'yahavta, and the other which has the Vahaya Im Shamoa. So that seems to be the way to look at it. The Rabbeinu Tam, however, learns it very differently. The Rabbeinu Tam learns it, and some of the Mefarshim are Mefarish the Rabbeinu Tam, to be actually being Medayik in the Bein Einechem. And the Bein Einechem is an interesting way of looking at it, because it's not between your eyes, as we learn later on. Actually, totefet means that it would be higher. So why even use the word bein einichem? So the Rabbeinu Tam understands that the bein einichem is a reference to the division of the brain in the visual cortex. And it's bein einichem because you're going a line that would go straight through the two hemispheres of your brain. In which case, we look at each one as if it has a reversed right and left, just like your brain processing would be. So if we're looking at a detached left hemisphere and a detached right hemisphere, so then it would be a little bit difficult for you to get the single image that you have now. And what we would have is reversed imaging. in which case you have Shema Vahaya Im Shomoa means as read from left to right. So Shema Vahaya Im Shomoa would mean that Shema would be outside and Vahaya Im Shomoa would be inside. And on the other side, you would indeed have Kadesh and Vahayaki Yaviyacha. But if you're going to be a multi-brained person whose brain is connected, Baruch Hashem, in the middle, and it's not Beinecha, so then Einachinami. You would read it a little bit confused, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, because it would go Kadesh Li, Vahayaki Yaviyacha, and then it would jump, if your brain is connected, to Vahaya Im Shomoa Tishma'u, and then it would go to Shema V'Ahavta. So that's basically the machlokas between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, and it's a fascinating insight into the meaning of Beinecha. It's like a whole different way of looking at the Beinecha. It's not just a placement in terms of look at a line that you would draw from the real place of the tefillin down to Beinecha. It's rather a real placing it Beinecha in the ultimate sense. Anyway, I see nobody's too interested around here. I get no smiles. But, Ori, at least you could smile, huh? There's some people who retain it, at least for a year or two, you know. Anyway, we search still for innocence. Continuing onwards, gosh. Omer of Chanano Amarab. Thanks for the try. A Khalif Parshiotav Pisulot.
I've never heard anything like that in my whole life.
There you go. That's excitement.
People would appreciate that that's the understanding of Rishonim and the Gemara. It could change how they view Torah.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll add it if I can. My brains and my left and right aren't working properly. That's why I can't get it. That's why people are confused.
That's why you always speak in that language that I never understand. That explains everything. Okay. Baruch Atah,
I told Shoshin that we're learning mezuzah and tefillin. So she said, I understand that's why you need to drink, so you shouldn't be parched.
Not her, too. What have you done to your wife? Oh, my God. Okay. Omer of Chananel Omerab, Hechalif Parshiotav Pisulot. If you change the order of the parsha, it's actually going to apostle it completely. Omar Abaye, well, now, wait a minute. It doesn't mean any change at all. It means, lo amru, the only time that we would say that it's mamish pesulot is if you put a gviata libriata and a briata ligviata. So now you take one of the inside parshiot and you flip it with an outside. So according to Rashi, what would that mean? The two inside parshiot are Vehayaki Yaviyacha and Shema. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, the two inside parashiot are Vehayaki Yaviyacha and Vahaya Im Shomoa. But in any event, each shita, the fi shitato, just you should know that the four basic type of tefillin, so you don't have to go through the gross, detailed 60 different type of tefillin, the four basic type of tefillin is essentially the way we just described, Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. But we also have an inverted, meaning a mirror image, of both Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. And those are the four basic. So that an inverted Rashi is the Raivitz Pshat, and I should say rather an inverted Rabbeinu Tam, really, is the Raivitz Pshat. And then we have also the Rambam Bipano, and he is an inverted Rashi. So those are the four basic tefillin. So you can adjust the Gviyasa, the Briyata, and Briyata, the Gviyata. They don't need much adjustment because there's only two possibilities. Whether it goes left side, right side is not the point over here. We're saying the only nafkamina is from inside to outside is what Abaya is saying. So if you switch the two outsides, so that means that according to Rabbeinu Tam, you would switch Shema with Kadesh. And according to Rashi, it means you would switch Vahaya Im Shomoa with Kadesh Li. So that would be not a problem because it's still at least on the outside. Amalei Rava, I don't understand that pshat. Like, where's this prejudice about inside and outside as opposed to left and right? What makes you think that looking towards one direction is the same as looking towards another direction, as long as it's looking out. It's just prejudice, as far as I can see. Why did you say that if you switch the in for the out, or the briyata legviyata, or the other way around, an out for an in, there you say it's puzzle. It's puzzle because you're taking for granted that the zikaron that we're talking about, that the zikaron achas has to preserve the concept of the arba totafot, right? Okay, so then if it's preserving it, what's the difference if it's preserving it? Remember, the simple meaning, if it wouldn't have said the zikaron, which teaches us zikaron echad, then what would I have done to the tefillin? I would have had these four boxes. I mean, it wouldn't all look, like there can. I would have like a nice decorative four chambers on my head, and they would be the four parshiot, right? So now, if we're talking about the way in which it's preserved inside a single bayit, it would still have to be the way that it would be on your head. And there's obviously going to be a difference between what the inside of the parsha is looking at, so to speak, because it's affecting the space around it in exactly the way that your eyes reflect the space around it. So you're saying the one that needs to be in airspace is not, and the one that needs to be inside is exposed to the air. But we say the same thing about briyata legviyata, gviyata libriyata. I mean, briyata libriyata and gviyata legviyata is just as bad, because the one that needs to see air on its right is actually seeing it from its left. So Avir the Amin is looking at Avir the Smol, and the one that needs to see Smol is looking at Yamin. I therefore believe Loshana. I don't understand where you get the idea. If the order is Ma'akev, and we're agreed that the order is Halacha L'Meshmi Sinai, and therefore it's going to be Ma'akev, then it should be Ma'akev no matter what direction it goes in. Now, we're going to have to get into a little bit of the batim, and again, how they're made. So remember last night, we learned that we can look at the batim essentially as a glove with the thumb cut off. So now we have those four chambers, which are connected to your four fingers. You're looking down from the part of the glove where you would insert your hand, and you see four fingers underneath you. There's no thumb. You've got this additional piece that's coming out, which would be covering the palm and back of your hand, right? So now you put the four parshiot into the four fingers of your glove. Now you've got this whole additional piece, which is supposed to cover your hand. So what do you do with that? Well, you don't need the whole thing. And this is actually what you would be looking at if you're looking at a piece of the raw leather that you're making the tefillin out of. It would essentially be a glove that you're looking at from the top. Now, you're going to cut off the extra part, which was meant to cover your palm, but leave on the extra part that was meant to cover the back of your hand. So now you put in the four parshiot, either, like we said yesterday, if you want to, you can put it in all attached to the same piece of parchment, as long as there's enough space, machlokas rebbe lechachamim, as long as there's enough space to put it in and have it all the way inside the finger and standing up and so on. According to chachamim, you don't even need that. Or your simple way in which we do it, practically speaking, is we would have the four separate parshiot. So we put them into their respective fingers, according to the machlokas of Rashi and the Rabbein Tam and the Ravid and the Rabbi Pano. We would put them in the correct order, and then we would cut off the extra piece of skin which corresponds to the palm of your hand. And now we would be having our tefillin with a big piece that was extending outwards, and we would fold it over to cover the part that was the fingers. So that creates a bridge. So to bridge over all of the fingers, we fold up a piece that was sticking out of the leather, and that is called the titura. Titura basically means a bridge, and this is a bridge in the sense that it's like putting over a bridge over all of these different holes. And now you've just put one piece, like the daf of a gesher, you've put over those holes, and now they're all covered, and you've got yourself your tefillin. But you forgot that you have to also leave space for the ritzua of the tefillin. So the way that the ritzua of the tefillin fits in is that the bridge does not fold back directly over the fingers of your glove. Instead, you allow it to protrude towards the back. Take a look at your tefillin shel rosh. And then you leave room for, before it's bent over, you leave room for putting the titura into the titura. You leave room for the actual ritzua that's going to be going behind it. Then you fold it over, and the ritzua now is able to move in that space. So it's like a belt loop. And that belt loop allows the ritzua to move very easily. And that is called the ma'abarta. So the ma'abarta is the word for the place where it goes through. Ma'abarta, to go through, to be ma'avir. It's your belt loop. So the belt loop that allows the ritzua, which could be a belt on your pant, is here the ritzua of the tefillin, and it moves freely inside of that ma'abarta. So now we understand we have the actual tefillin itself, which is called the ketzitza. It's the piece that you've now taken off of the large piece of leather that you have. And then you have the titura, which is the folded piece that goes over, that bridges the entire back of the tefillin. But it also was extending a little bit to allow a ma'abarta beneath the bridge, so to speak, between the two parts. So if you hold it upside down, it would be underneath the bridge. Okay, so we have a ma'abarta as a halacha l'meshe Sinai as well, says Abaye. So Rav says the titura is a halacha l'meshe Sinai, that there has to be a ma'abarta, and that the ritzua is not connected to the tefillin. It has to be in a belt loop. Is also halacha l'meshe Sinai. Furthermore, says Abaye, the fact that the sides, right and left, of the tefillin need to have a shin on them. And how do we make that shin? We make that shin by forcing out the leather and not by putting the shin on them. So we force the leather to protrude from it. So that is also halacha l'meshe Sinai. And therefore, you basically, it'll be a machlokes Rabbi Natan and Rashi, which is this against Vahaya im Shamoa, like Rashi says, on that side, or and Kadesh, or is it Keneged Shema? But anyway, as you know, you have two completely different shaped shinning. That's also part of the halacha. And where do we get that other shape? What is it meramis to? The other shape of the shin, which has four legs to it, is actually the shin that was on the luchais, because remember, the luchais, actually, you could see through the luchais. The engraving of the shin would have had stone around it. So you would have had four parts of the shin to create the three inside parts, which are connected to the shin on the luchais abriz, right? Okay, so on one side, you're going to have a three-leg shin. On the other side, you're going to have the four-legged shin, which is really a three-legged engraved shin. It's nice if you just hold your tefillin in your hands, your shel rosh, and that way you can see everything very clearly. It's not showing up on the screen so well because you need to get a little bit more light on the shin. Yeah, there, a little bit. Okay, very good. Okay. I can make it out, I think. Right, but all of these pieces you need to look at. Why don't you show us the Ma'abarta? Yes, indeed. Now, you'll notice that Ma'abarta, as opposed to the entire titura, why don't you show us the titura? Well, you're showing us the top side of the titura. Yes, so that is the titura, which is etched in the stitches. You see the square stitches? Those are the stitches that are directly connecting the titura to the ketzitza. So the ketzitza, when it was made, had a little bit of leather sticking out at the bottom. Now we're going to connect the daf that we bent over to that area, which is what the stitching is. Show us the stitching again. Now, the Mahabharata is now sticking out from that area, which is you're looking at the bottom of the Titura and the Mahabharata. The problem is that in order for all the parts of the tefillin to be square, which we're going to be talking about in a moment, we can't have that Mahabharata extending directly out of the Titura. Because then when you'd look at the tefillin from underneath, they wouldn't be square. They would be rectangular. So you see those little notches on each side of the Mahabharata. That's one solution to the problem, in that we simply set the Mahabharata aside, so it's no longer part of the Titura, so that it's graphically separate, and now the Titura is square, then there's no din that the Mahabharata has to be square. So the Titura and the stitches on the Titura are square. This is not the only way that the shitas go. That's the way in which we make it nowadays, but there are shitas that we don't notch it. We literally cut the edge so that the Mahabharata is a small area that sticks out and from the Titura. And it's not notched from the end. It's not the whole size of the Titura at all. It's just like a little bridge that allows, like a belt loop, not that small, but we cut off on each side a significant amount to make it separate from the Titura. And Tzorech Shiagia HaCharitz L'mekom HaTefer. Now, the way that Rashi learns is that this is a strange reference back to the Charitz we were talking about yesterday. Now, the Charitz that we were talking about yesterday, if you recall, is the Charitz that goes between the Batim. You want to show us that? The four Batim. Each one of them, why don't you get more light on the subject here? Each one of them has a charitz, it's engraved so you can see. Yeah, there you go. Now we can see it. Yeah. Okay. So that has got to get all the way down. Show us how it gets all the way to the tefer. Right. See? So that charitz goes down to the stitching. Show us the stitching. Bend it a little bit. Okay. It goes all the way down to the stitching. That's the top of the stitching that we saw before on the bottom of the titura. That's the top half of it. And those charitzim have to get down to that stitching. That's how Rashi learns, which is a little weird, because yesterday we said, according to many shitas, that the charitz is only really necessary. Tosfos says everybody uses it, but it's only absolutely necessary in the case of where you wanted to use one or one klaf for all four parshios. But remember that there's two different issues here. There's the charitzim, and there's the threads that you pass between them. So the threads in a chirani, you would put only in the case where you're using one piece for the four parshios. But the charitzim we make on all the tefillin, and Rashi learns, it's talking about this charitz. The pashtus of the Gemara, which is the way most Rishonim learn, is that what it's talking about is the bottom of the shin, which is calling here a charitz, because it's pulled out, and that charitz has to get down to the stitching, which it does, as you can see. Rav Dimi Minarda Amar, it does not have to get all the way down, but kiven de minkar lo tzarich. It's not necessary, and it's fine if it gets just, you can see it clearly from the outside. It doesn't have to get to the stitches, and the question is, how far does it have to get? Okay, that's all details. Should be details. Each one of them bring a machlokis. V'yomer Abaye, another basic thing that you need to do with your tefillin is the cloth that you're writing the tefillin on, the kilfa the tefillin, tzorech lemivdike. Before you write on that cloth, you have to check to make sure that there's no little hole in it. Because if there is, Dilma itpe reuta, it might have some kind of problem that you didn't notice if you don't look carefully, but it might have a little hole in it somewhere. And since you need uchtavtam, which we learned that yesterday means kitiva tama, it has to be perfectly written. If it's going to go over a hole, then that is going to put a notch into one of the letters, and therefore it may end up not being a Ketivat Tama, because it may be missing that piece, which would be Ma'akim, that Ot, the Leka. You don't have Ketivat Tama in the event that there's a hole there, and this is actually a Machloket about what size hole we're talking about. So Abaya seems to be of the opinion, which not everybody holds that, that even if the ink goes over the hole and it doesn't fall into the hole is thick, so it looks like you have a complete hole, but if it's not written on actual parchment and it's just standing there on a blank hole, then we don't view that part of the oath as being there at all. Even though the reader will look at it and he's never going to see the difference because it's so thick, it formed basically a letter, but that is not a letter on parchment, which is necessary in order for it to be a kosher letter for your tefillin, which is part of the ketivah, the ketavtam. Therefore, check it before, because you won't necessarily note it later. That's what Abaye is saying. Masha Enkein, Rav Dimi Minarda says, you don't need to check it. Because if there's a hole there, then as the sofer is writing it, it's going to catch the edge of whatever pen you're using to write. And he'll feel that there's a hole there, and therefore he'll know that you can't use that part for the tefillin. So it's going to be, by definition, the kulmus is the quill, is going to be bodek, whether there's a hole, b'shas k'siva. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, another halacha l'Moshe Misinai, is that the ritzuot of the tefillin need to be black. Now notice it doesn't say anywhere that the tefillin need to be black. And indeed, Tosfos says that there were people that bedavka made their tefillin white, like the skin would be. Only the ritzuas would be black. So that is halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Meisvet. Tefillin ain't kosher notan ela b'minat. You're saying that they have to be black? But here it says you do need to use leather. Yes. But the same thing that you make the tefillin ktitza out of, you make the ritzuot out of. But we don't care what color they are. They could be green, they could be black, they could be white, any color you want. And this would all be multicolored tefillin. Very, very nice. Wow. It sounds absolutely beautiful. But Adumot lo yaseh, don't make them red, because red makes them look bloody. And as soon as they're bloody, everybody's got a theory as to why they're bloody, you understand? Next thing we know is we're probably going to be able to trace the messages on your phone back to Epstein, and you've been sleeping with women, and you got some Nida's blood. I mean, you're insane, but who knows? So apparently people were crazy all the time, and since we're talking about multicolored LBYGH or whatever they call it. These are colors, so they might as well be connected to Epstein. So therefore, it's a crazy Gemara, but apparently people actually thought this. Mipnei v'dover acher. V'dover acher would mean that they've actually been sleeping with Anita and they got blood on it. I mean, it sounds insane, but not when you read today's headlines. So nothing has changed. Anyway, but even if people are not that ridiculous, it still looks like you've been scratching yourself and you've got your blood, your skin is all bloody, and that itself is a gnai. So it could be just that gnai or dover acher, which is a reference to more sexual issues. Amar Rav Yehuda, there was a maaseh, b'talmido shel Rabbi Akiva, shahaya kosher tefilav b'lashonot shel techelet. He didn't even use leather. He used these beautiful ritzuas that he made out of tcheles. You know, he figured, wow, I could put together the tcheles with the tefillin also. And this is like the ultimate one-upmanship. You can imagine how many tefillin his sofer shop is going to be selling, right? So now he's got tcheles in his tefillin. Now we can start arguing, is it this type of tcheles or is it that type of tcheles? Maybe it's Regina tcheles. Who knows? Anyway. And Rabbi Akiva didn't say anything to him. Now, how do you explain that? If Sharo Totzat Ikra Talmido, he would see his Talmud wearing tefillin that are puzzle halacha l'meshim Sinai, and he didn't say anything to his Talmud. That absolutely proves that there can't be halacha l'meshim Sinai, right? Says the Gemara, no, it doesn't prove a darn thing. You're absolutely right. That tzaddik could never have seen his Talmud wearing his tchelis with his tefillin and not said a word about it. But guess what? He never saw him. Why do you have to assume? Oh, there you go. There's Uriah. You're right, Hein? Absolutely. However, lo ra'ah, ve'imra auto lo'ayah menicho. If he would have seen it, of course he would never have allowed such a thing. The same thing happened with Maaseh ben Hurkanes, but Osher Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanes, he was using, this is for his rituas, l'shonot shel argaman. You could just imagine the competition over here. Argaman tefillin or tchelas tefillin. And I ask you, if Sharoto Tzadik Rabban Ovalo Michabo, you believe that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanes would have seen his son Hurkanes wearing tefillin with argaman and he wouldn't have gone nuts and tore him up and tell him this is completely puzzled, so obviously it's kosher. Omrelo, no, you're absolutely right. He never would have seen his son Hurkanes wearing argaman tefillin. However, he never saw him. Hey, but Laura Auto, had he seen him, he certainly would have put a stop to it. Anyway, so getting back to our sugya. So we were talking about multicolored ritsuas. And here it says it could be green and it could be black and it could be white, but just don't make it red. But Rabbi Yitzchak says it's halacha l'meshim Sinai that they have to be black. So how do you understand the braita? Oh, that's not a problem. One, the braita is talking about the color on the bottom of the ritsuas that are up against your skin, and you're not going to see that. So there, any color is okay except for red. Mashenke, the original mimer of Rabbi Yitzchak, was talking about the color that faces you on top, and that is on the outside. And therefore, that has to be black, and only that has to be black. Halakha l'meshim Sinai. Fine. When we say inside and outside, it's not only the way that you put it on your skin, sort of randomly. It's there is an inside and outside to the ritsuas themselves, because the part of the leather that is smoother, so that would be the outside. And that's the area that the hair is on the, or the wool, whatever, or the feathers, whatever you're using. Remember, it's possible to use any or whatsoever. That part is the outside, and the part that was up against the dermis, that part is going to be covered because it's never as smooth. So there is a given inside and outside. All right. So this, of course, leads to the question about what about the part that's on the side? And does that have to be black? And all of the chumras on blackening, in which nowadays they put the black through the hole, they force the dye through the whole ritsua, so that the, even if there's part that has been scratched and so on, it's still going to always look black. That's the latest chumra. I think it's only about 10, 20 years old, but everybody has changed their ritsuas to make sure they have the latest. Says the Gemara, how can you say that Rabbi Yitzchak was talking about only the outside, and the braita was referring to the part that's against your skin? If it really is against your skin, so then why is there gnai? It says, don't use red. And nobody's going to see the red. So who cares? So why did you say gnai or davar acher? What kind of other concern is there? Well, the concern is zinim debitapchimle. I mean, it can happen that, you know, you accidentally, your tefillin became, the ritsuas became reversed, and if you reverse the ritsua, so then people will see that it's red on the other side. You don't want that to happen. Tana, you also need to have tefillin merubaot halacha l'moshe misina. So this means that your tefillin have to be square. And the question is, what particularly is it referring to, the entire tefillin? And is it referring to the way in which the tefillin are sewed? So Omer of Papa, what it's talking about is betifran uba alachsonan. So it means the way that you put in the stitching of the sewing of the titura to the ketzitza, So Rashi says what it means is that it has to be careful that you don't make the stitch too tight, because if you do, then you'll be wrecking the square. So he says that you have to be careful not to make it too tight, which is a very strange way of learning it, because the pashtus is that it means that the stitching has to be square and not that the stitching shouldn't be too tight. As a matter of fact, the tefillin merubaot, if you take a look in Tosfos over here, he brings yesh ein merabin ela makom moshavan, that the tefillin themselves, the actual ketzitza, doesn't have to be square. The only part that has to be square is dafka on the bottom where they're sitting on the titura with its stitching. So for Rashi to say we're only going to be makbid on the stitching, that it isn't too tight to wreck the squareness of the chibur of the ketzitza to the actual bayit, is a little bit, to the titura, is a little bit weird. Okay, there's a lot of discussion about why in the world Rashi would be forced to learn such a thing. And it's also a machlokas about what do we mean when we say it has to be square, because we're talking over here about a cube, really. The tefillin are a cube. Does it have to be cubed or does it have to be squared? So let's say that you have your tefillin are very high, and they're still squared in terms of the length and the width on in that dimension, but the height is not included. Maybe the height was a lot, was more. So how do we actually look at it? So lemaisa, I mean, even though bidiavad, it doesn't necessarily mean that they all need to be square as a square. We're going to see what the issue is over here. Let's think about what could be meant by square. When we use the word meruba, we would use the word meruba for a rectangle as well, because it is a meruba. So it could be a parallelogram. It could even be a shape of a diamond, right? A rhombus, which would also be a something that would be meruba in terms of the word meruba. So what exactly is meant over here with the meruba? So the Gemara is about to explain, as Rav Papa points out, that meruba also includes, which changes everything, it also includes the diagonal. Once it includes the diagonal, now you're in trouble, because if it's both betifrun, the stitches have to be meruba, and the alachsonan, that means that it has to match, the diagonals have to match. If the diagonals have to match, then obviously it has to be a square, literally, because if it were a parallelogram, then the diagonal in one direction would be longer than the diagonal in the other direction, which would, if it's shaped like a diamond, there would be tremendous differences in what the length of the diagonal is. So therefore, what Rav Papa is saying is no matter how you measure it, that diagonal, the diagonal should be the same. And if it's the same, so then that would mean, imagine you have a case over here of something that is rhombus-shaped or diamond-shaped, right? So then going from one corner to another corner on the far direction of this diamond would give you a very long diagonal, and going from one corner to the other corner on the short side of the diamond would give you a very short diagonal. But then the alachsonan wouldn't match. So what the alachsonan matching means is that you have to make sure that the relationship, remember, that the relationship in terms of the hakpada of the Torah certainly does not mean literally square, because that's impossible. There is no way to make something exactly square unless a malach is going to make it, like we just have chatzi adam in Mishpatim, right? So as Rashi says, well, who made it chatzi adam? Ba malach v'chilka. But how are you going to get precisely one half through any kind of technology? So there's no way to make your tefillin square. So therefore, the way that we define the squareness of the tefillin is by matching the diagonals to the Gemara's Kabbalah of what is considered to be kol amsa beribua, is amsa v'trei chumshe, if it's If it's in a ribua, it equals 1.4. And what about all of the remainder? The remainder doesn't count. So the square root here is reduced to, the square root of 2 is reduced to 1.4, precisely. You don't have to get it any better matched, which allows your tefillin to be within that tolerance. It gives you quite a bit of tolerance there, the same way that the Torah allows pi to be 3 to give you tolerance in those measurements. So the same thing is true of your tefillin, and that means your tefillin can be out of sync with actual ribua to the extent that the square root of 2 differs from 1.4. So lema misaye ale. So again, the pashtus is, and the way that it's done l'chadchila, is that it's actually made as a cube, and that is certainly according to Moshitas, it's made as a cube, and you have to make the titura square, and you have to make the stitching square, and in order to make sure that the titura is not messed up its square by, as we pointed out when we were looking at Alon's tefillin, by the fact that the Mahabharata is sticking out from the titura, we put those notches in, or we cut off part of the Mahabharata, and that way the titura remains clearly graphically square. Shalema misayyele. Can we bring a raya from the Mishnah in Megillah that that is true? As it says there, ha'oset tefilato agula, somebody makes his tefillin rounded, so then it would be, first of all, a sakana. Why is it a sakana? Well, because if he falls on his face to do tachanun, he may put those tefillin right through his skull. I mean, once you're following tachanun, you might as well do it with a bang, you know. Boy, that would be one heck of a tachanun, especially since tachanun is supposed to be a remez to a person accepting misa upon himself. This guy went all the way. Anyway, or the simple meaning, Rashi understands it, if you bump your tefillin on the door, on the top of the door as you're going on in, it might put those tefillin right through your brain. So therefore, it's a sakana. This, remember, was the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos we had before about the sakana of the mezuzah when it's sticking out me'achore hadelet. So over there, we had also two concepts of sakana. The sakana is that you didn't have a mezuzah to watch you, or the sakana is that you bump into it and you'll hurt yourself. Or that which Tosfos says, to be consonant with this sugya, it shouldn't mean anything but an actual sakana of hurting yourself. Besides, in bar mitzvah. So it's saying if it's rounded, so there's no mitzvah. And that seems to be saying what Rav Papa said. It can't be rounded because it has to have an actual flat square that will have an alachson that is going to be the same as 1.4. And obviously, if it's rounded, it's not going to have a 1.4 alachson. No, not necessarily. Rav Papa, I mean, look, you know, it'd be nice to have it as a raya, but it isn't, because the Mishnah could be talking about where it isn't flat at all. It's round like an agoz. It's round like a nut. So that's not what we're talking about. There's no, if it's round like a nut, so then it doesn't have anything that is able to be stand, you can't stand it on something. It's going to fall to the side. That is not what we're talking about. That's a different problem. Rav Huna. Tefillin, if you have tefillin that are damaged, let's talk about the extent of the damage. Kol zman shepnei ha-tabla kayemet. So if the top of the outside of the cube is okay, then even if there were tears in the inside, and remember that the outside is really sort of an artificial outside, because it's the outside that's turning the four totafot into one zikorin. But essentially, I mean, we need these four totafot, right? So those four totafot are the inner chambers, the houses. And therefore, you might think that if any of them are torn, then that means your tefillin are torn. But Rav Huna says, actually, if the outside surface of the tefillin are whole, so then even if there's problems on the inside, that's not going to pulse your tone. But if there's a hole on the outside, then that would be a problem. Now, the question is, how far does that go? So Rav Chisda says, now, wait a minute. It depends how much of damage there is on the inside. So therefore, I am not arguing with you about the outside. For sure, if you've got a hole on the outside, that's possible. But if you also don't have a hole on the outside, and you do have a hole between some of the inner batim, then it depends. I would say, if two out of the four are torn, so then that's okay. But if three have a tear in it, so then you have most of it, and most of it, not in terms of the actual length of the tear or the number of tears, but basically you've got, out of the four totafot, you've got the rov is torn. So because of that, if you have shalash, it will be possible. Rava says, even if you've got two, it's possible that they're possible. So hada amik shtayim kishe rov, when you say, but if there's only two, so then it's not rov, and then it's kosher, that's not so pashat. Lo amran elaze shelo kineged ze. That's where you don't have two separate of your batim, one next to the other. Aval ze kineged ze, if you have one next to the other, so then that would also be possible. So let's say you've got basically two, let's talk about, you know, you've got one and two, or you've got two and three, and they're torn. So then that would be a major break in your tefillin, and that would be possible. But if the first one to the outside and the third one to the inside, that would be torn, then it would be kosher. Fine. Obviously, if it's three, so then it's rov. Then it doesn't matter how they're arranged. But it would still be considered to be possible, even with two, if they're one up against the other. And therefore, if it's zeh keneged zeh, it's possible. And even where it is zeh keneged zeh, I don't mean that any tefillin are possible. Lo amran ela bechavata. If you've already got internal problems in brand new tefillin, then something is wrong with the way that those tefillin were processed, and the skins are obviously not properly processed, or they may have some kind of organic problem. They should not be tearing if you've got new tefillin. And therefore, it's a sign that these tefillin are no good. It's not because of the fact that there's actually tears in it. But if you're talking about old tefillin, where over there the skins do become dried out and so on, if it's atikta, then it's not a problem. Lesson, but it doesn't show that the tefillin are falling apart, and that's just common wear. But if it's showing up in new tefillin, that is, now we'll have to define what we mean by that, new and old tefillin, but anyway, that is uncommon wear, and because of that, it's a problem in the skin and not in the wearing of the skin. Now, what do we mean by those words? How do we define old skin and new skin? Omele Abayelor of Yosef. Well, how do you define those words? Hechi damian chadeta, hechi damian atikta. I mean, what? You're not giving us any indication. Omele said to Rav Yosef, if you can stretch the leather and it then is so elastic that it then will go back. Skolehecha, kimitle be beshilcha v'adar chalim, you'll pull the leather and it will go back to what it was originally and it will be chalim. So then, chalim means then it becomes well again. So then that is called atikta. Masha enkein, if it's still maneuverable, because it's not, hasn't taken on a shape that it's going to stick to, so you can pull it and so on, then it's still fresh leather, and idach, anything else, is considered to be chadata. Now, this is the girsa that we have. Sounds a little weird, and indeed, there are exact opposite girsas. If you take a look, that's brought from the Tezus and the Shita. Fine. Or, I'll give you another way of telling the difference. If you pull the tefillin up by the ritzuas while somebody's holding it and not allowing it to move, you can still pull the tefillin with those ritzuas towards you, and it doesn't tear through the ma'abarta. That's new. But if it's terrible, then it would be considered to be atikta. Now, moving on with the dinim of the ritzuas. Abaye Avi Yosef Kameda Rav Yosef, and Ifsik Le Ritzua de Tefillin. He was once learning while Rav Yosef and his ritzuas actually tore. And now the question is, does he have to replace it, or can he make a knot in it and therefore have his ritzuas on? Now, we're going to see later on that when we talk about ritzuas, we have these lechatchila ritzuas, which they're long enough on the shalyad to come all the way down to your hand, and you can wrap your whole hand with it, and they come down in your shel rosh, they come all the way down to your belly button and all of that. That's not the ikar din of the ritzuas at all. The pashtas, the ritzuas, we're going to see that it's not quite like that, but the pashtas, you would think that the ritzuas are that which allows the tefillin to remain on your head. So the part that goes around your head is the ritzua, and the part that goes around your arm and holds the tefillah on, that's the ritzua. Anything else is extra luxury ritzuas. So if that's the case, as we're going to see soon, then Abai had a problem because the tear was not later on in his ritzua. The tear was in the actual functioning ritzua. Now he wanted to know whether he can tie it. So Amalei asked Rabbi Yosef, could I be Yotze? I don't want to miss Shir. I mean, that would be a disaster. I'll have to listen to the recording. So see in those days how makbid they were not to hear the recording. So he wanted to actually make a knot in his ritzua so he wouldn't have to go out and get new tefillin. So can I just knot the two pieces? Amalei ukshar tam ktiv shetaik shira tama. Your kishira to your head or to your arm has to be tama, it has to be a single piece, and therefore you can't knot it. Omale Rav Acha, brother of Yosef, Rav Ashi, how about sewing it? Could you sew it? And I'll tell you how to sew it in a way that would look like it was tam. Obviously, you can't sew it by having stitches running across the tear, but what you could do is you could bring the two tops, the black part, you bring the two parts together, have them come down a little bit, and then sew them very tightly at the seam. And then when you pull the two apart, you don't see any type of stitch. You just see like a line in between them. But that should maybe be pretty good. How about that? So, mahu lemitfere vila aile litvira legav. How about doing the sewing, which will only show on the underside of the ritzua, and then it still looks very nice on the top? Omar, so he said, okay, you go out there and you find me somebody who did that. And if you can find one person in the population of the city, we can consider it. Okay. So this is like a classic response that we've found is very, very nogeh lahalacha. And that's what's this basically the Hillel response, where Hillel says, Imlav neviyimim, b'nei neviyimim. Klal Yisrael knows what the correct hanhaga is. So even if you forgot and I forgot, we can simply go and we can look and see the way that people actually act. So you go find somebody who does that. If you can't find people doing it, you can assume that it's not supposed to be done. Omer of Papa, the gardume of the ritzuot are kesherot. So remember what gardumim are. We've talked about gardumim in the sense of you had kosher length tzitzit, and now your tzitzit tore. So now the question is, if they were made lechatchila, they were made okay, the gardumim, which are the leftovers, so now as long as there's something left over, it doesn't have to be the original size. So we have that din. We had the din benogea, the hazoyas, in which you don't have the entire, what did they call it? Hyssop, right? The plant. Yeah, okay. So whatever, if you don't have the full shear, remember the Gemara says you need to have the full shear to be able to dip into the mayim and so on. And that's, so you have eight eras, ve'ezov, you don't have what you needed. But you had a chatchila. So the gardumim are the leftovers, and that would still allow them to be kosher as long as there's a minimal gardumi. So now we've got the same situation over here. The gardumim should be kosher too. But says the Gemara, it's actually the opposite is true. The gardumim are not kosher here, because since the B'nai Rabbi Chiya pointed out bedavka, the gardumim of Tchelas, or the gardumim of Ezov, those are kosher. Why did he say those two cases? Because Hatam, in those cases, we're talking about Tashmishei Mitzvah. The level of the Kedusha over there is that it's something that was used for a mitzvah. But over here we have something that is used on a Dover Shel Kedusha, which is much more higher Darga than a Hefta Shel Mitzvah. Because since the Tefillin are an object of Kedusha because of the Osios of the Shame and the Parshios that are in them, so because of that, it's much more Hakpada. And therefore you can't say that just because Gardumim are kosher in mitzvah, there will be kosher for Kedusha and Adarabah. If B'nai Rabbi Chiya only mentioned the Gardumim of mitzvahs, that implies the Gardumim of a Heftesh or Kedusha, which is called Tashmishe Kedusha, would actually not be kosher. Hey, wait a minute. If you're talking about Gardumim, then it means that there is a particular shear. I never heard of a shear. Are you telling me that the Ritzuis have a shear? There's a minimum extra space, meaning outside of the area that holds the tefillin on your head and that holds the tefillin on your yadai, that outside of that area, there's a minimum shear. What's that minimum shear? I never heard of that. V'kama shiurayu. Oma Rami Barchoma Omer Eshwakish Ad Etzpa Tzreda. They have to go out beyond the place where they're tied so that they stay on your head. So that's the knot on the back or the knot on your yadayim. They have to extend until your pointing finger, the etzba tzreda. Now, what exactly does that mean? From where to where? So that would mean two different things. Rav Kahana, he was machve kafuf. And Rav Ashi, sorry, is machve pashut. It may mean the maximal distance to etzba tzreda. The maximal distance is Rav Ashi's distance, which is all the way between your thumb and the etzba tzreda. But the other way of learning the distance to the etzba tzreda is from the adjacent finger, the third finger, which is nowhere near as big. This difference is nowhere near this pisser. So this is called kafuf, and this is called pashut. So, machlokas, what the shear of etzpa tzreda actually extends to. Rabba would put on his tefillin, and then, if there were ritzuos that were left, he would put those ritzuos to the back of his head, and they would go down his back. Not like we do, where we have the ritzuos coming around the front and going down the front of your body. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, he would put the tefillin on with the kesher, shel tefillin, and then he would be matlitlu, he would mix them into a braid so that they weren't just hanging loose. He didn't want the ritzuos to be hanging at all. Whereas Mar Barei de Ravana, he did the way we do, Avid Kedidan, meaning that after his tefillin shalrosh were on, anything that was extra and was hanging down, he would pull around to the front, and he would have it hanging down in his front. But that means that this whole idea that we have of the length of the ritzuos is not the mi'ikra din of the ritzuos, they are really the gardumi. Omer Rav Yehuda b'Rei de Rav Shmuel bar Shilas b'Shmei de Rav Kesher shel Tefillin Halacha l'Moshe miSinai. The way that the tefillin has to be tied is halacha l'mashe mi-Sinai. Now, that's the way that most of the Rishonim learn. So remember that we need that there should be a knot that should be, one of them is a tzura of a dalet, and one of them is a tzura of a yud, which we're now looking at one of the tzuras of the yud. So machlok is how to make that tzura of the yud. And how is your dalet? As you know, there's a machlok is how to make the tzura of the dalet. Lift up your tefillin. The dalet, you're showing us the yud. But we don't see the knot. There we go. So coming from South Africa, we understand that his dalet is going to be the dalet that you're looking at, which is the knot itself is the dalet. If you don't come from South Africa, you might not be a Litvisher. And then you might have a different. Does somebody have their tefillin out to show us the other dalet? Who's a fine Hasidish Bocher around here? The Rebbe is holding something with more Kedusha than the Kedusha's tefillin, so he doesn't want to put it down. I understand. But okay, you're all familiar with the other knot, I'm sure, which is, you know, what they sometimes refer to as the double dalet, because they think it's the dalet on the knot. That's the dalet, but the dalet is the way that the ritzus come out of the knot. One comes in this direction, one comes in that direction, and that's the full dalet of that actually the square dalet. In any event, so some learn that that's what it means. By the way, there are some who hold that really the square dalet is a double dalet because the knot is the dalet, not that the ritzus are the dalet, but that's actually a machlokas. Some learn that it's the ritzuas that form the dalet, and not the knot that forms the dalet. What are you showing us over there? Dyslexic tefillin? Didn't make out anything. So that's the question. Rashi learns throughout, as we're going to have in a moment. I think Handy is showing us bear tefillin. But bearskin tefillin aren't kosher. They have to be bepicha. They have to be edible. Quite amazing. Now, I don't know how Zoom missed out on Tsuri today. Probably knew that Ari was going to move away. So didn't even bother. See, you see that? It's also predictive AI. So it's only going to put the kids that are going to play together. They stay together. It's really crazy. But anyway, I have to speak to Danny about this. But not everybody learns like Rashi. Rashi learns throughout. He always explains that the Kedusha of the Tefillin is the Kedusha of the Osias, which are the Osias of the Shame. And he learns that though the Kesher is actually has the Kedusha of the Ois, of the Ksiva. And we're about to see one of the examples where Rashi says this in a moment. But the problem that Tosfos has with that is the obvious problem, which is that then the dinim of the Ritzuais should be that they are actually a Chefza Shel Kedusha. And that being directly a Cheftas or Kedusha, they should have all of the dinim of the tefillin and so on, which they do not have. And therefore, if there's no Cheftas or Kedusha, instead of being, we call them Cheftas or Kedusha, like a Cheftas or Mitzvah, but over here they would be an actual goof of Kedusha. We wouldn't just be accessories to the fact. And the truth is, it's very strange because the shape of those letters are not the kosher shape of the letter. And always we say that you need Kedusha Tama. I mean, it's not a kosher Dalet that we've got over there. And it's not a kosher Yud necessarily that we have over there. And so they argue and they hold that there needs to be a Kesher Shel Tefillin, but that these particular Osios do not have to be, or other Shitas hold. There needs to be these particular osios, but they're not real osios. They're just remuzim to the osios, but they don't give the kedusha to the ritzuos as if they're a gufa shel kedusha. Okay, so we've got a number of different approaches to that. And Reb Nachman says, not only that, but it's the same halacha l'moshe m'sinai that holds noyeyam levar, that it has to be the black part of the ritzua is what you see on the outside. So if you're looking at the ritzua itself, or you're looking at the kesher, you have to be seeing the shiny part of the black of the ritzua and not the under part of the ritzua. Rav Ashi Avi Yosef Kamei Mar Sutra, and his ritzuas actually flipped so that he didn't realize his apkakrei ritzua the tefillin. And he was wearing his tefillin with the white part of the ritzua that was facing outside. So Omar Leisim Mar Sutra said to him, excuse me, but lo sevele mar v'noyeyem levar? You're telling me that it doesn't have to be ever held of what we learned, that it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that you have to have only the outside exposed? Omar lei, lava daitan. Sorry, whoa, I didn't realize it. Now, this hakpada is a hakpada that is only on the part of the ritzua that actually holds the tefillin to you. But if it's just that additional part of the ritzua, we don't have that hakpada. Remember that we had this sugya in Mayit Kotten, that it's a terrible thing for a ritzua to be mishaper, and he went ahead and he fasted for 40 days. This was a story about somebody else, but he fasted for 40 days when such a thing happened. So apparently it's mamish, it's a tremendously harsh of a thing, and here he's just treating it as if, okay, sorry, you know, and flipped it back over. So the truth is that the Mishnah Berurah says that that was mamish chasidus gedela, and that it's not part of the Ikar Din. And if somebody is on such a madrega that it really is bothered to that extent, yeah. But again, it would be referring to the part of the ritzua that holds it onto your head or your hand. And when we say, V'ra'u kol ha'me'a aritzki shem ha'shem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha, and Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol said, Elo tefillin sheberosh, so that, according to Rashi, is the Elo tefillin sheberosh bedafka, because it has two of the oysters of the shem. So it has the shin on the tefillin itself, on the ketitza, and it has the dalid in the back. So this is one of the places where Rashi talks about the kedusha of the oysters that are on the ritzuas. Others learn that the reason that we say that that is the one that is specifically the Shema Hashem Nikra Lecha and not the one that are worn on your yadayim is because they're worn as an extension of your skull, Bein Einecha, and that's why they're Ra'umi Mecha. Now is a good time to discuss why we call tefillin tefillin. So Tosius said earlier that the reason that we call tefillin, when he was explaining why we call totefet, totefet, we said that was the we mentioned yesterday, that the totefet is the name in Shabbos, in Bamei Sheyotzeit, is the name of a decoration, of like a crown that's worn across the forehead. He explains at the same time what's the lashon of tefillin. And he says that tefillin is a lashon of vayipalel Pinchas. So what it means is that it is a argument. Tefillin are argumentative, and they're meant to be in your face. So in other words, all of these goyim that are walking around thinking that there's something, this is in your face. We are Bnei Yisrael. We are walking around with these parshias. We are Bnei Bechori Yisrael. We are those that know Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And this is a completely different way of seeing what a human being should look like. And that's the extension of our brains and our tefillin. And therefore, that is why we call them the greater Kedusha, because that's what they see. Hashem Hashem is Nikra Alecha, and therefore it has a greater Kedusha. Abaya Havi Yosef Kameder of Yosef, and he too, Abaya, we're not up to Abaya yet, right? Vahasi Roti et Kapi, Vraita Tachorai. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that Ani Avir Kol Tuvi Al Panecha, and I won't allow you to see Panai lo yera'u. So what was the achorai that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu? Omer Rav Chana bar Bizna, Omer Rabbi Shimon Chasida, Melameh Cher Alo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo Moshe, the Kesher shel Tefillin. And the Kesher on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Tefillin, remember, is basically, as the Gemara in Brachos explains, that this is the Kesher shel Tefillin. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears Tefillin. It says, Nishba Hashem b'yamino u'bizra u'zo. So that is the Tefillin shel Yad, the Tefillin shel Rosh, and the Parshias of the Tefillin. Instead of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears Mik Amcha Yisrael Goy Echad Bar. It's unbelievable, Gemara, unbelievable. So over there, that the, so to speak, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is wearing around the universe is Tefillin, so the Kesher Shel Tefillin is that which integrates every, and that's how the Rambam understands it in the Mar Nevuchim, that when it says, as he has a brisker pshat, remember, it's a beautiful pshat in the Mar Nevuchim, that Ani Avir Kol Tuvi. So how could Kol Tuvi, what does Kol Tuvi mean? I mean, it doesn't have any explanation. What's Kol Tuvi? Says the Rambam, Kol Tuvi refers to Maaseh Bereishis, where it says Beferish. It's Kol Asher Asa Vihine Tov Maod. So that's Kol Tuvi. So how could you possibly be Mavir Kol Tuvi? It means that all possible permutations and combinations of all of the basic elements of the universe were given to Moshe so that there would be no limit to what he would ultimately be able to derive from the information that he was given. So that becomes the equivalent of this idea of the Kesher Shel Tefillin, which is the integration of, so to speak, the Kola Olam Kulai. The entire universe is Mekusher in that back of the Tefillin, which is a remez to, in terms of Kabbalah, to the olive, which is the small olive. That's your double dalet knot. And that small olive is the Kesher Shel Tefillin that Moshe Rabbeinu was being shown all of the details in the Eil Meyed. But that, maybe when we get to Vayikra. Anyway, a beautiful place, I think, to end. I guess we could go down. Let's just finish up until, I know that it's terribly late. But I mean, we have one more line basically, and then we finish the dinner of the Kesher, and we'll get to the brachas. Tomorrow we'll deal with the brachas. Omer Rav Yehuda, Kesher shel Tefillin tzarich sheyeh lemala. You have to put the Kesher tefillin on the back of your head, not where your head has already ended, so that it's on your neck. Kidei she'eh Yisrael lemala v'lo lemata. This is to show that Klal Yisrael is the Rosh, and not the back, which ends up as a zonaf. V'tzarech she'eh klapei panim, and it also has to be kineged the panim. So not towards the side of your neck, but directly in the middle at the nape, so that it is facing mamish, the panim. And this is also, she'eh klapei panim is a reference, according to many Rishonim, to the tefillah shel yad. The tefillah shel yad should be turned towards the inside, which means that when you put your arm against your chest, then the tefillin face towards your heart. And that, so it would be meramis over here to both things, both your tefillin shel rosh, the knot, and your tefillin shel yad. Okay, tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, we will continue with the dinim of the brachas of the tefillin. Another very exciting day.